John Feinstein, whose best-selling books set in sports include Season on the Brink and A Good Walk Spoiled, has also written about tennis, baseball, and football, and he's the author of 7 novels as well. His most recent book is titled One-on-One, Behind the Scenes with the Greats in the Game, and he joins me now from WAMU in Washington. John, welcome back to Only a Game.
Bill, thanks. Good to talk to you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year back at you, John. 25 years ago, you spent a season with Bob Knight when he was coaching the men's basketball team at Indiana, and it was not an entirely happy experience, and Coach Knight accused you of betraying him when A Season on the Brink was published. Why did you want to revisit that experience?
In thinking about what I wanted to do to mark the 25th anniversary, I thought, why not, since I have written about so many different people in so many different sports, sort of cherry pick the most interesting characters I've come across, the ones who were the funniest or had the most fascinating stories to tell. You got to start with Bob Knight if you're me, Bill. you can't avoid that. He's the elephant in the room of my life.
As I said before, your experience with Bob Knight was not entirely happy. But did he really say to you at one point, John, there are times when I'm not sure Hitler wasn't right about you people?
He did. I think he thought he was being at least semi-humorous. One of Knight's biggest problems is that he has a bad sense of humor. He's tone deaf. My friend Dave Kindred, who's known Knight for longer than I have, once said the sound of Bob Knight's life is uncomfortable laughter because he's constantly saying things that he thinks are funny, and people kind of look around and go, he's being funny, right? In this particular case, after practice one day when I was talking to one of the assistants and Knight couldn't get his attention, he decided it was my fault because he'd been telling me a story. And when we walked over, Knight's comment was, John, I'm not sure that Hitler wasn't right about you people. At that moment, with 5 assistant coaches standing there, I knew I couldn't take him on, that he would have to win the argument. And my goal wasn't to win arguments. My goal was to get through the season with the access that I had. So I waited until that night when he and I were alone in the car. And that's when I brought it up. And I said, you know, Bob, my mother told Jewish mother jokes. All right. And so it's not like I'm ultra sensitive to that sort of thing. But Hitler wasn't funny. And there was this long pause, and finally he said, you know what I hate more than anything? And I thought, oh, God, we're in the middle of nowhere in Indiana. He's going to tell me he hates ungrateful people and drop me off by the side of the road. And instead he said, I hate when I say something stupid. That's the closest during that year that I ever heard him say, I'm sorry to somebody. He never actually said those words, but that was about as close as he could come.
John, Al Gore claimed that he invented the internet, and you claim in this book that you may have invented the blog in Czechoslovakia, no less. How did that happen?
Well, I was in Czechoslovakia in 1986 covering the Federation Cup, which is the women's version of the Davis Cup. Martina Navratilova was coming back to Czechoslovakia for the first time since she had defected in 1973, now as an American citizen representing the United States. To make the story as short as I can, Bill, because it's about a 45-minute story told properly, a hockey player defected from Czechoslovakia while I was there to the Washington Capitals. I was there for the Washington Post. I ended up finding his mother in the factory where she worked. We went back to their apartment. We were talking for a couple hours. She spoke some English. My friend was translating. And the Czech KGB showed up. Apparently, they had followed me. I'd gotten into some trouble in the Soviet Union while I was there covering the Goodwill Games, and I guess they had some kind of tail on me that we had been able to lose for at least a couple hours. I was detained for a while. They kept demanding to know what I was doing, talking to Mrs. Pavanka. Michael Pavanka was the player's name. We went back and forth, and finally they let me go. But under orders from my boss, I went to the embassy. A guy at the embassy, a very nice man named Sam Westgate, said, yeah, they're not going to arrest you, but they're going to make you miss your plane on Monday. And Westgate came out to the airport and actually got into this confrontation with Czech officials. And I made the plane with about 2 seconds to spare, frankly, because Martina Navratilova was on the flight and got the German pilots to stall till I could get there. But when all this occurred, somebody said to me, you need to write down everything that has happened while I was still in the country and get it to the Post. So they have all the information, everything that occurred. So I just wrote in the first person everything that had happened that day from bribing the cab driver to take us to the suburb Kladno, where the Pavankas live, to being detained, to my conversation with the Czech KGB guys. And as I was writing it, I realized that was probably a blog. And nobody had thought of the term, including me, but that was 25 years ago.
John, you write that you anticipated that one-on-one would end with the last thing Bob Knight said to you when you encountered him 25 years after the fact, the season that you spent with his team. How did that encounter go, and what did that last thing turn out to be?
Well, the encounter was brief. I went to Madison Square Garden to a game that he was working for ESPN. And, you know, we've had our moments during the years where we have talked. So I said, Bob, have you got a minute? And he said, no. And he started to walk away. And so I fell into step with him. And I said, Bob, I need to ask you one question, which was true. Do you want to talk to me for this book or not? And he turned, he pointed his finger at me, and he said, are you deaf, John? I said, no. And I just said, that's fine. If you don't like what's in this book, please don't come crying to me. And that was the end of it. And really, I thought when we had that conversation in November of 2010, that that was where I would end the book. I would say something like, well, 25 years later, Bob Knight is still Bob Knight. But tragically, 2 months later, that changed. Probably my favorite book among all the books I've ever written is A Civil War, the book that I did on the Army-Navy football rivalry back in 1995. And I've stayed very close to most of the young men who I wrote about in that book. Many of them have served overseas. One of them, Kevin Norman, died overseas. And on January 21st of 2011, I got a phone call from Jim Cantaloup, who was the defensive captain of the Army team that year, telling me that Derek Klein's wife, Christina, another of the defensive backs, had committed suicide that day. They had three little children. Christina had battled depression for years. She'd been on meds. They'd been working. They stopped working. And a couple days later, I talked to Derek on the phone. And, you know, there's nothing you can say in a situation like that other than to say how sorry you are and you're there for him the way so many people were. But after I talked to Derek, the next day I received an email from him. And for years, the sign over the door in the Army locker room said, I lay me down now to bleed for a while, and I will rise to fight with you again, which is a battlefield poem written by an Irish poet in the 19th century. And at the end of the email, he just wrote, I lay me down now to bleed for a while, and I will rise to fight with you again. And you can imagine my reaction as I read those words. And shortly thereafter, it occurred to me that that person, Derek Klein, those young men from Army and from Navy, my relationships with them, how I feel about them, defined far more poignantly and clearly how lucky I've been the last 25 years than my relationship with Bob Knight or anybody else. My relationship with Bob Knight allowed me ultimately to go on and do those things, but the relationships that meant the most to me were the relationships with those young men. So that's why I chose to end the book with Derek Klein's story.
John Feinstein's most recent book is One-on-One, Behind the Scenes with the Greats in the Game. It's published by Little Brown, and the author joined me from WAMU in Washington. John, thanks very much for speaking with me.
Bill, thanks for having me again. It's always a pleasure.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabu. Our technical director is John Ferrati. Our intern is Jeremy Conlin. Thanks to John Cherry at WAMU in Washington, D.C. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To view Karen Schaefer's Snow Days photo gallery or learn more about this week's music selections, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. Our final word this week comes from CBS Sports national columnist Greg Doyle, who explains why he'll be skipping the Super Bowl parties again this year.
If you've got to do something to show how cool you are, you're probably not very cool, and that's my excuse for sitting home reading the newspaper at night.
Yeah, right. And then there's that little matter of an invitation. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Support comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children both in and out of school at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.